Welcome to the Sweaty Pillow Podcast, where we dive deep into the heart of menopause. It's not just about hot flashes and night sweats. It's a journey, a transformative phase of life that encompasses so much more. Here, in our sanctuary, you'll find more than just another menopause podcast. We're your one-stop destination for support, bringing together doctors, thought leaders, and experts to explore the issues that matter most. So, join us. Embrace the wisdom and let's navigate this menopausal adventure together. Because we see you, we hear you, we are you.
Welcome to the Sweaty Pillow Podcast. I'm Lara Smith, and today we have an extraordinarily special guest with us. We have Dr. Vonda Wright, and I'm going to get into this really extraordinary background of Dr. Wright's. Dr. Wright is a pioneering health innovator and really renowned for her expertise in optimizing aging, which we really care about here at the Sweaty Pillow. Dr. Wright is a double board certified orthopedic surgeon, a researcher whose work synthesizes the fields of sports medicine, the science of aging, and the nuances of women's health, best-selling author, a couple of the books, Younger in 8 Weeks, Guide to Thrive, 4 Steps to Body, Brains, and Bliss. You can tell there's a trend here, but why we're so excited, and we are on the edge of our seats for the new book to come out August 26th, everyone. So mark your calendars. It's Unbreakable, Women's Guide to Aging with Power. Like I've seen the overview, I've read experts, and I personally in our community cannot wait to get our hands on this. Dr. Wright, thank you so much for joining us today. What did I miss on your background, and tell us more?
Well, I really do appreciate being on today, because we were talking earlier about what your company does and the name of this podcast. I have lived through, and I am bold enough to say, mastered menopause because of what I've learned and written about it. And I want to inspire generations of women, because what is also true about me is I'm the mother of a blended family of 6 children that includes 4 millennial daughters and daughters-in-law. And it is my goal that the millennial women, or my Generation Z daughter, who's now 17, will never have to suffer the way women in Generation X, or certainly how the baby booming women have suffered. Because by the time they get here, they, if I have anything to do with it, are going to be unbreakable. They're going to know the options. They're going to have plugged in ahead of time. So that's my goal.
I love it. It's such a worthy cause, and it's necessary, because our mother's generation went through it in a way that wasn't necessary. Yeah. Menopause hit me like a punch in the face, and I should have known better, and I wasn't ready for it. Something that I got from either watching one of your talks, but this expression has stayed with me. I wanted to put it on sweatshirts. You are educating women on how to go from menopause misery to midlife mastery. That is kind of a phrase that I haven't been able to let go of since I've been researching, preparing for today. Tell us to start with about your menopause journey.
So you know what? I had my 17-year-old at a time when OB-GYNs called me a geriatric mother. Thank you, OB-GYN. Like, what is that about? But anyway, I had her after 40. And so I'm raising this baby. I'm building my career. I'm in the prime of my career in my early 40s. And then at 47, I thought I was going to die. I mean, literally, I was having heart palpitations in the middle of the night. And my family dies of heart disease. And so I'm calling up my cardiology friend. I'm like, Ricky, I think I'm dying. He sticks me on the, does an echo, sticks me on the treadmill. He's like, you're fine. Like, I don't know what's going on then, because I am not fine, because I am having hot flashes in the middle of meetings. I am sticking my thermometer leg out of the bed so I do not roast my husband and I, right? I'm having brain fog so bad that I started losing nouns. I could describe anything, you know, okay, I'll use this thing that writes and clicks. I couldn't tell you I needed a pen. And I thought I was having early dementia, and I started looking up early signs of Alzheimer's, because Great Aunt Ida had Alzheimer's in my family, right? You would think, as a double board certified orthopedic surgeon with 22 years of formal education, that I will have known. but I didn't know. And so, like you, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And so I started digging deep because I don't tend to take things sitting still. I'm like, what the heck is happening? What do I need to know? What books do I need to read? How do I make my hormone optimization decision? How do I change the way I exercise? Because what I've always done is not working. And I did that rapidly, such that within a year or so, I went from being totally miserable, not recognizing myself, blowing up in meetings when I am a calm person, I do not blow up in meetings, to I really feel like this is the best time of my life, both physically, emotionally, mentally. And it's a journey that I don't want other people to run into the brick wall that you and I have run into. And I think women deserve to have a conversation about living longer for ourselves. We just don't get the table scraps or leftovers that are happening in generic books or books focused on men. I think we're 51% of the population. We get our own stuff.
Table scraps. That's the best. It is true, right? We take care of everyone else. There's so much around research on men's health care and what happened along the way that women's health and this transition was not studied and researched and care generations before us. You know, it still blows my mind.
Yeah. And we have a lot of catching up to do. You know, until 1993, women, it was not mandatory to include women in studies. And so when we say things like, we don't know how this affects women, or we don't know, it's not because we haven't read the literature. It's we truly don't know because the studies have not been done to the same extent on men and women. And so we have a lot of work to do as a generation of women to catch up.
Well, you're the perfect person. I saw something on one of your talks about you were in surgery. This isn't someone, a librarian, like you were in surgery and you couldn't remember the name of a tool that you had to ask an assistant, a nurse, whatever to hand you. And imagine that feeling, like, you know, arguably saving lives on an operating table and you couldn't remember. Like, that's what we're dealing with here. It's not casual.
No, it's not funny. It's not cute. It's not casual.
No.
And it's not just about the things we think about most often. We think about those things that manifest outwardly, the night sweats, the brain fog, the waking up at 3:37, which was my middle of the night wake up time every single night, repeatedly, right? Until I got it straight. It is the fact that night sweats and the hot flashes and the severity of the vasomotor reaction to loss of estrogen is associated with higher cardiovascular disease. This is not inconvenient. This is deadly. The fact that 70% of Alzheimer's are in women, and the fact that Lisa Moscone's work shows that the brain lights up with estrogen receptors, right? We need to figure out the cause and effect, the interventions that need to happen. I don't know, maybe at 35, maybe at 40, because we are now beginning to understand that these changes happen much earlier than we perceive them happening. It doesn't just start at 52.
Right.
A decade before.
That's really important information. You just said two things, and I just want to go back because they're so critical and life-saving. You talked about the cardiovascular impact and how that's life-threatening. You also said something that I haven't heard that stat before, so my mind's kind of blown, which is, did you say 70% of Alzheimer's is women?
It's mostly women.
That's blown my mind. And the other thing that I'm getting from your research and reading about what's coming in Unbreakable is that this isn't a genetic play. Most of what we can do to impact, I think the stat is 70% of how we age is determined by lifestyle, not genetics. I got that from your work. So tell us more about going way back, women paying attention to this in 30s. Like, what can we be doing differently?
I say 70%. If you read in the longevity literature, you know, some people say up to 90% of our health and aging is determined by our lifestyle. Because here's what people don't understand. We do inherit a set of genetic material, but what genes turn on and off have to do with what we eat, how we're exercising. We talk about in the book how a simple bout of aerobic exercise will change 9,800 molecules in your body, whether we're turning on genes, transcribing proteins. I'll give you an example. Contraction of skeletal muscle causes the transcription of many things, but a molecule I'm really fascinated by is a molecule called Clotho. It is the longevity protein named after the goddess of the thread of life, Clotho. We know that contraction of skeletal muscle causes our genes to make this protein, right? I did this study. I used to do a lot of clinical research. I still do, but not in the volume I used to. And one of the studies was looking at the expression of this longevity gene in three populations of people. In sedentary young people, in active young people, meaning less than 40, and in active, chronically exercising people 50 and older. I found, not surprisingly, the most Clotho in active young people. Not surprising, right? They're young and they're active, meaning they're investing in their mobility, their weightlifting, their aerobic exercise. Who had the second highest level of Clotho? The old exercisers, not the young sedentary people. Old exercisers transcribed higher levels of longevity protein Clotho than sedentary young people sitting in their office buildings at a computer for 10 hours a day. So I describe a time in life called the critical decade. I have put brackets around 35 to 45 because if 45 is the average onset of perimenopause, the decade before is the time to get our critical SHIT together from a health standpoint, to elevate the standards, to understand that coasting through like we did when we were 20 is going to end. And we must build the standards of mobility, standards of smart nutrition, standards of sleep. Then, so that when we get to these times, which are biologically pre-programmed for our ovaries to retire, we've already got the things in place that can keep us healthy, vital, active, joyful. And we don't have to learn 22 new habits. It's just how we live, right?
Yeah.
That's a really long answer to say that there is never an age to not be establishing the lifestyle standards that are going to enable us to age with power and not end up as a picture of frailty.
No, and once that slippery slope starts and we haven't done the work and we haven't set up our foundation of habits and we haven't been doing all the right things, it's, you can't turn back at that point, right?
It's harder. You know, there is never an age or skill level where we can't build muscle, where we can't increase our function, but it is so hard. Once we hit 55, 60, 70, why not carry with us this lifestyle that we just augment, right? There will still be things to improve on, but it's easier to layer on than to say, okay, I need to change 22 things because I've had a heart attack, right? So,
So one of the things I really got loud and clear from watching your work and the lead up and what I'm getting out of your new book that I've read is mobility and bone density are areas that you focus. Why and what should women be doing about that?
Well, you know what? I'm interested in the whole health of a woman. So in a typical office visit with people who come to me with, let's say, frozen shoulder, I will talk about sleep. I will talk about their hormones. I will talk about their blood sugar and if they're pre-diabetic. But the unique place in the universe where I live is the fact that I am a practicing orthopedic sports surgeon. And my job is to keep you mobile because the research is solid. There is no disputing. No one can argue with me or anybody else about the fact that we are designed to move. I mean, if we look at our bodies, our strongest muscles are below our belly buttons. If we were designed to be sedentary, we would be shaped like a mushroom. Nature is very conservative, or Jabba the Hutt. We would be boneless like a slug. Right. We would be slugs. That is not how we are. Right? Yeah. And so by our very design, and I'm an orthopedic surgeon, musculoskeletal is my field of expertise. That's why I come at it from this vantage point. But just because I do doesn't mean that muscles are not important for your glucose, your sugar glucose. It doesn't mean that your bones are not important for your whole health. Because let me tell you this. Last July, I remember the very podcast I was on, I introduced to my audience the thought that bone is not just structural, right? I mean, I'm a bone doctor. I have bones in my office. Bone is not just structural, holding us up, helping us move. It is the storehouse of minerals for our whole body. It is the place that many of our blood cells are made in our pelvis and our long bones. It is the organ. It's an endocrine organ that secretes proteins, hormones that go to our brain and help us build better brain. I know that help us with glucose regulation, that help us with muscle building, that if you're a man, help you produce testosterone. So we must maintain our bone density across our lifespan, not just so we don't fall in fracture, that's one reason, but because bone and muscle are critical components of our overall longevity. Because how many people do you know who have a perfect brain? They have retained their brains, but they're so frail they can't get off the chair.
Yeah.
Talk about being trapped, right?
It's heartbreaking. Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. So that's why I approach it from a musculoskeletal standpoint. And when we think about the musculoskeletal system in menopause, as many women, about 70 to 80%, will experience one of the musculoskeletal syndrome of menopause as has hot flashes. So it's about 80%. You think of everybody having hot flashes. Everybody, if we put it all together, will have one of the following: arthralgia, which is total body pain. I did. It was debilitating. And I'm an athlete and I could barely get out of bed. Total body pain, which is called arthralgia. Frozen shoulder, which is where out of nowhere, your shoulder will not move and you can't hook your bra, right? Loss of muscle, loss of bone, loss of muscle stem cell viability. Fat redistribution, holy cow, where did that come from, right? Low back pain due to the fact that the discs in our back lose structural integrity, increase in arthritis. These are all musculoskeletal symptoms of menopause that are together as common as hot flashes. So how come more of us don't know about it? Many women come to my office and they're like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm falling apart, right?
Yeah, because it's not obvious in a moment where we're sweating and we have to wake up. Like, that is tangible in the moment. I have to do something about it. But all this is going on under the skin and there's symptoms, but why the hell are we not paying attention to that as much as we should?
We don't know. I think we have a big public education job to do, but you know, it's the same thing. Many women don't know what their heart does, how to save their heart, or how to save their brain, or, you know, we're busy with life and finance and our jobs. I mean, for sure, I can't tell you how to expertly invest in stock like a woman stockbroker could. Same thing. She can't tell me how to take care of her body. Tell me how. It's not our expertise, but it needs to be.
What's more important? You know, for my personal journey, as you're talking, I'm reflecting back on, I've had a year and a half, and I think it started with my primary care physician. She did the typical tests of like a woman in 50 something and said, hold on now, your bone density, Lara, there's something there. And this is what you have to start go doing, but lifting is one of them. Yes. And that started me on to researching HRT. So I started hormone replacement therapy slowly over a year and a half. All of those things are in place. Mm-hmm. And I started gradually losing. I'm 30 pounds down from a year and a half ago. But through that, I stopped doing aggressive Peloton anaerobic, and I started lifting heavy. And my partner is he's an ex-professional athlete. So we were lifting more. And I think it's just come together in the last few months. Now, everything is at play, like the HRT, all of that's working, but I'm sleeping better. I have more energy. I don't have lower back pain anymore. That was plaguing me. I was a former tennis player and I have disc issues, but you're just talking, I'm like, wait a second, is all of this now helping my lower back pain? I literally don't have it at all.
Yes. Low back pain is a symptom of your disc drying out. The fact that most of us sit at a desk most of the day, mm-hmm. which weakens our back, weakens our core, absorbs our glute muscles. And once we start resupporting our body, our back pain can get much better because the pelvis is the center of the body's universe. And if it's the weakest part, everything jars it. But if we're able to support it better, now you're on HRT, collagen and the words are annulus and nucleus pulposus of your spine discs are more well supported. Mm. It all works together. It's not one thing. I don't want your audience to believe that it's one thing. It is a lifestyle supported by hormone optimization if you choose to do that. And I just want to stop and say, because many times only 4% of us have decided or even know to consider hormone optimization. And that's another education thing we need to do. If you decide not to do that, it's your right to decide not. It doesn't mean that you can't improve and live long and prosper. There are all the other lifestyle things to add on. It also doesn't mean if you have decided, like you and I, to do hormone optimization, that that's all we have to do. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. You're right.
Yeah. The other lifestyle things. And my experience is similar to yours, meaning I spent a year later layering on lifestyles, making profound changes in the way I worked out, and it all came together, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't one thing. But as I invested in the time, I course corrected to the place where I really do feel like I have a handle on mastering this time of life. And when I am consistent, I feel amazing. And when I fall off because I'm traveling or whatever, I don't feel that amazing. So that's a huge
moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's some nuggets from your book that I want to tease our audience with because it's so important that they get this book on the morning of August 26th. So the 6 time bombs of aging, tell us about that.
So within the longevity literature, we have now explored what are the real reasons that we go from birth to death? What are the biologic things? And how do they affect the aging process? And there are 13 biological processes. So in this book, Unbreakable, I have chosen the 6 that I think are summary enough that we need to cover. Things like our energy balance through an organelle in our body called mitochondria. How do we keep our energy systems healthy? How do we control inflammaging, the chronic inflammation that happens with time and loss of estrogen? What do we do about something called senescent cell load? There are 4 destinations of cells in our body. We can have stem cells, which are capable of becoming anything. We have mature cells, which are doing their job, their muscle, their heart, their brain. And when these mature cells get old enough, they're supposed to turn on the genes that are going to cause them to die. It's normal. It's called apoptosis. But there's a population in the middle that are so damaged from their life's work that they cannot die. And they're called senescent cells. And they circulate, they spew out damaging cytokines, which are just bad chemicals, and cause us to age faster. Well, we can affect that. And so, and the another one we cover in the book is how our gut changes, how our absorption of food and vitamins change. So I put those because I think women are smart. I think the more we know, aside from, oh, just do this exercise plan, oh, just eat this thing, the more likely we are to be compliant, the better conversations we're going to have. if we know that by adopting the protocols I write about, that it's going to actually affect our mitochondria, it's going to change our inflammation, that's motivation, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we put some science in there for people.
Important. I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the FACE protocol?
Yeah. For decades, I have been prescribing exercise to midlife people. All my research has been done on people 40 and over. We need four components of an exercise program, and the acronym is FACE. And so what I've done in Unbreakable is I've taken that framework and I have expanded in it and progressed it with add-on things that I've never written about before because the science has changed. So F is flexibility and joint mobility. Why do old people walk in a shuffling gait hunched over? Because their joints don't move anymore. So flexibility and joint mobility. FA is aerobic. I used to describe aerobic as only high intensity or interval training. Now we're prescribing as brisk walking and sprinting. FAC, we're still carrying a load, but instead of only focusing on body weight and functional movements, we are now teaching people to lift heavy and what that means and how you do it without getting injured. And finally, FACE is equilibrium, which is balance, but also foot speed. I am now teaching people agility programs so that we don't fall down, because you can be as healthy as you want, but if you fall down and break a hip, 30% of the time, you have a chance of dying. So we've expanded this framework, outlined how you can implement it in the book. And you know, interestingly, I haven't talked about this a lot lately, there's an app that's coming out when the book launches that will show you how to do it. Because my editor correctly said, Vonda, you need to show people. So we developed an app that goes along to show you the exercise protocols that are written in the book.
You have a system coming out that is going to change women's lives. And I love that you combine the science and the understanding so that women have the opportunity to go deeper than I'm carrying extra 5 pounds on my tummy, which is annoying, but let's go deeper and understand, which will force the habits, which will force the motivation to make these changes. It's like, I can't wait. A couple more. I love how you say fine isn't enough. How are you today, Lara? I'm fine. That's not enough anymore. Embrace the 3 C's. Tell us more.
So, you know, part of this book is about your physical, biological resilience, right? Nothing is going to change unless you believe the future can be different. If you think that the best time in life, I always look over my left shoulder, is when we were 25 and that there's nothing we can do to make today better, you're not going to, our mindset is everything. So we have 3 mental health chapters in the book. The first one talks about goal setting and about removing barriers. And who do you want to be anyway? And then further along in the book, I teach you a hardiness method introduced by 2 scientists, Steven Stein and Paul Bartone, that I became certified in during COVID, because I looked around me at other orthopedic and medical people and realized the high level of burnout and suicide that was going on. And I said, we have got to do better. So their method is to look at 3 aspects of hardiness, which is the part of resilience that can be trained like a muscle. So we look at the concept of control. Do you believe that the small changes you make every day can have a profound effect on your life? Or are you stuck believing you are powerless, right? And how do we take you, if you're in that place, powerless to agency, if you will?
Mm-hmm. I love that.
The second C is commitment. How important is this to you? Are you going to keep going and be committed to being healthy, vital, active, joyful? Are you like, fine is good enough. I'll take it. I'll, you know, when I'm 80, I'll be frail. Are you committed? Right. And finally, we have to, I always forget the third one of the three C's. But are we able to just keep going in the dog days? We call it the dog days. It's not glamorous every day. You don't take your after pictures in your bikini every day and you're like, I have been working hard. It's those dog days when no one is watching that you show that you are still worth it. And so that is the building that hardiness in our brains as a way to motivate going forward. In my mind, is just as critical as building the physical part of our body.
It goes together, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So Dr. Wright, as we're waiting, counting the days down to August 26th for your book and your app and the system, what can we be doing tomorrow, the next day? Like, what are the things that you're like, get after this right away? Don't wait.
So you know what? Number one, here's an amazing thing that people can do right now. If they go ahead and pre-order this on the book webpage, The Unbreakable Book, if you put in whatever we're asking for to prove you are, it's coming to your house, we're going to send you the introduction so you can be all set up. It's in place now. Anybody can do it right now. It's in place now. So you can hear the story, my story, the story of one of the women. I tell their story in the book, Ava, because I feel like until you can see yourself, you don't believe it can happen. So that would be important. For the women in your audience who are so struggling, you're like, I don't know where to start, and aren't really doing anything except going to their jobs and sitting for 10 hours a day. The challenge now is after your biggest meal of the day, go out and walk. It is mentally relaxing, but more importantly, it is going to drive the glucose from your meal into your muscles and is going to start working on the insulin insensitivity that happens when estrogen walks out the door. It's profound how walking can help that. And I know it works because I have been performing a grand experiment on myself for about a year and a half right now. I wear a continuous glucose monitor because I'm just a geeky science person and I want to know. When I walk after my biggest meal, my blood sugar does not bump. It is so steady because my body is churning the glucose into my muscle as energy versus being overwhelmed and accumulating in my belly fat, which I'm happy to show you. I'm a real woman. I have a remnant of it, you know? So once you do that, if you can do it every day for 7 days, just commit to it. Leave the dishes on the table. They are, no one's going to arrest you for not doing your dishes. It's called a streak in running. When you do something for 7 days, it's called a streak. You will not want to miss another day because you've already done 7 days. And that is the start of the habits and standards that are going to prepare you for what you're going to read in section two of this book, which is how to face your future.
That's incredible advice. It's so, there's no excuse. I'm sorry, sweaty pillow warriors. We are going to be walking after dinner, whichever our biggest meal is. So Unbreakable, Women's Guide to Aging with Power, comes out August 26th. Pre-order, everyone, because then you get the guide, the intro. Dr. Wright, I am blown away by what I learned today. I'm so grateful, and our audience is so grateful for your time and your research and your work and your energy. It is intoxicating and compelling. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sweaty Pillow Podcast. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. We're here for you every step of the way. Together, we'll continue to learn, grow, and thrive through menopause and beyond. Be sure to subscribe for more empowering conversations and practical insights. Until next time, take care, stay strong, and keep embracing the wisdom of this menopausal adventure.